We are pleased to invite our next guest into the studio. NPR Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner is in town to speak at North House tomorrow night about climate change, and we are lucky enough to have him in the studio right now. Welcome, Paul.
Hey, lucky enough. I'm honored to be here. Thank you, CJ. How are you doing?
Really, really, really
good.
Well.
And Dave, I love, you know, Roadhouse, the name of the show. I was just wondering if we're going to hear any Roadhouse Blues from the Doors. That's one of my favorite songs. So
find
you can crank
it,
that up later.
We're on it. We're
I do
on
request.
It.
Thank you. I yes. jest.
All right, so I was checking out your Updraft blog, mm-hmm. plug, and you talked about meteorological summer starting yesterday, June 1, and how is that different from like summer solstice kind of summer?
Well, meteorologists, as you may know, march to the beat of a different drummer, right?
Our
weather,
why we love you.
Our weather cadence is a little different, but really, CJ, the warmest 3 months of the year, meteorologically speaking, in the Northern Hemisphere are June, July, and August.
Right.
So for record-keeping purposes, it makes more sense to track weather, seasonal weather conditions in that three-month time frame. So meteorological summer begins June 1st and runs through August, and then we start fall, which is September, October, November, and on and on and mm-hmm. on it goes from there.
That makes perfect sense to me. So how has our meteorological spring fared compared to other ones?
It actually ended up warmer than average across most of Minnesota, especially for March and April. May was the first cooler than average month in the Twin Cities in 20 months. We had a string of 20 months in a row, and in St. Cloud and in many places in Minnesota, but not everywhere, about 20 months in a row consecutively warmer than average months. That's unprecedented in the modern climate record going back to 1880. Mm. We've never had that long of a string of consecutive warmer than average months. So May broke that string, even though it was only 6/10 of a degree cooler than average in the Twin Cities.
Just had to like throw a wrench in it.
That's it.
So you're in town to talk about climate change in Minnesota. What kinds of evidence are you seeing?
Well, it's everywhere. I mean, it's in the metrics, it's in the data. The two biggest things that are happening in Minnesota for climate change are, one, the winters are getting warmer. That is a very strong signal, very strong metric. Winters have gotten about anywhere from about 3 to 5 degrees warmer in Minnesota since the 1950s and 60s. January is the month where we've seen the most warming, about 5 degrees warmer in winter on average. Now, every year is a little different. We'll still get a cold year now and then. But when you average it over decades, over 20, 30 years, what they call the running 30-year averages, those goalposts are moving, and they're moving into the warmer direction. So warmer winters is one. The second biggest climate signal in Minnesota is that we're seeing more frequent heavy rainfall events. It's raining harder in the summer when it rains, and most of Minnesota is actually getting wetter with time, too, which is an interesting and kind of a surprising signal. So those are the two big ones. It's warmer in the winter. It's raining harder in the summer. And, of course, folks on the North Shore, I don't need to tell them that, especially after 2012 and the big Duluth flood, of course.
Right, right. So a couple of things I thought of while you were saying that. So Minnesota is a pretty large state.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're looking at these trends, are you seeing that some swaths in Minnesota, like maybe on the western side or northern side, do you see bands of precipitation that you feel like, okay, this area is going to get drier as we go forward, and this one is going to be wetter, or are we going to be pretty homogeneous?
There is a slight trend that the western part of the state is getting drier, or getting, shall we say, wetter less quickly, and that the eastern part of the state is getting wetter more often. The reason for that, I think, has more to do with where we sit on the continent, because as you move west from Minnesota, you run into a more arid condition. 20 inches of annual average rainfall is considered the threshold for a desert or a semi-arid climate, under 20 inches, and that line usually runs right about the Minnesota-Dakota's border. The rest of Minnesota gets over 20 inches, more like 30 inches in the eastern part of the state, to up here where we average, you know, we can average more like 30, 40 inches of rain year, precipitation, rain and snow combined. So the eastern part of Minnesota appears to be getting wetter. The western part is getting wetter, but a little less wet. But the, interesting breakdown in the climate signal across Minnesota, you know, Minnesota is a tall state, right? From north to south. Northern Minnesota is actually warming more quickly than southern Minnesota, just by a little bit. And that fits with climate change in general, the theory and the observed weather that we're seeing. So when we talk about climate change, we talk about what the models have said and the theory has said over time, and what's happening now, what we're actually observing with the data, fits that just about perfectly.
So we're speaking with NPR Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner. He's in town to speak at North House tomorrow night, and you're going to want to probably check that out. So, you know, when people are talking about climate change and the warming temperatures, and they say things like 3 degrees, most folks have trouble wrapping their heads around why that would make a big difference. How does such a small sounding number make such a difference on the environment?
Yeah, that's a great question, and you're absolutely right. We start to see significant sort of outsized changes with just small changes in climate. For example, that 3, 4, 5 degrees that I talked about, how winters are getting warmer in Minnesota. As many people up in the northeastern part of the state know, that difference has made a tremendous effect in the amount of ticks that have been able to survive. And, you know, scientists, of course, are looking into, well, is that the reason that the moose population has been devastated up here? There seem to be some strong links there. So even these small changes in temperature, Lee Fralick, who I'll be speaking with at the North House Folk School tomorrow night, taught me something really important. He says 40 below, Paul, is a magic number, 40 degrees below zero. When the forests up here get to 40 below, it's a very high mortality rate for insects, pine bark beetles, insects that can damage the forest. And we're not getting to 40 below as regularly as we used to. And, you know, 20 below is a lot harder to come by in the Twin Cities in winter. So these changes, even though they're small, can have large effects in animal populations, in water resources, in all kinds of different ways. And that's one of the mysteries of climate change as it unfolds. How are these effects really going to manifest themselves, and what will the surprises be?
Are you thinking, are scientists thinking that with the rising temperatures, will the Great Lakes lower in levels because of evaporation, or because we're going to be getting more rain, are we going to be filling it up as fast as it evaporates? Are we looking at any big changes that way?
This is why I want everybody to come to the North House Folk School tomorrow night, because the other person that will be speaking is Jay Austin from the Large Lakes Observatory at the University of Minnesota. He's the expert in that area. You know, I'm going to defer that question to him. The Lake Superior, the Great Lakes Basin, is, as you point out, highly dependent on precipitation in the watershed. So we're trending to see overall less snow in Minnesota in the longer range. That's what the modelers are saying. We're seeing some evidence of that in the data, because more of our winter precipitation is coming as rain and ice instead of snow. That trend is clear in the metrics, in the measured data. How that's going to affect runoff and watershed, that's a great question for Jay Austin tomorrow night.
Guess I'll have to go.
Please do.
I need to go anyway. We're talking with Paul Huttner, Chief Meteorologist for NPR. He's in town, and you can catch him tomorrow night at North House Folk School. What are your thoughts about the U.S. leaving the Paris Accord?
Multiple, many, many thoughts. I guess if I try to boil it down into, you know, atmospheric effects, I mean, there's atmospheric effects, there's my assessment of how this affects energy, renewable energy, and of course there are the policy implications overall and the politics of it. So it's a multifaceted thing. Here are the two things that I break it down into. One, in some ways it matters a lot, it's a big deal, and in other ways it's not that big a deal. It matters in a lot of ways, but in the short-term atmospheric impacts, it's probably not a huge impact, because it's not going to change the emissions curve that we are on right now in the U.S. in the very short term. A lot of what's driving emissions in the U.S. right now are the trends to using more natural gas instead of coal. That's helped stabilize emissions. Natural gas is a more friendly form of energy than coal. And economically, and the market forces have basically, that's what's destroyed coal, are the market forces with the success of natural gas. The renewable energy boom is just that. I mean, solar is expanding so dramatically. Solar jobs in the U.S. expanded last year at a rate of 25%. One in five new jobs in the U.S. last year was in solar energy. The number one growing job category in the U.S. last year was wind energy technician. So the market forces are already working, saying that wind and solar and renewable energy are getting a bigger bite of the pie. So our emissions curve has been stabilizing a little bit. Where I think this can make a really huge difference is how long this attitude stays in effect, or these policies stay in effect. And that's where 3, 4, 5, 10 years, the next 10 years are pretty critical in terms of what we do with emissions globally. So unless we see those start to come down, it's going to have dramatic effects 10, 20, 30, 50 years down the road.
And we here in the center of the country, in a lot of ways, we have it lucky. So people who are living on the coasts, as sea levels rise and those sorts of things, I'm thinking they're going to be sort of the canary in the coal mine.
I talk about this a lot on ClimateCast. We do a weekly show on climate change, climate science, on Minnesota Public Radio News every Thursday. And one of the things that we keep coming back to, in fact, this is what we talked about yesterday, are the facts of the trillions of dollars worth of real estate along the East Coast, the Gulf Coast, places like Florida, places like New Jersey, and especially places like Miami, which, you know, they're already getting flooding on sunny days. The geology of South Florida is limestone. So as the sea level rises, the hydrostatic pressure just pushes the water back up. You can't build a wall. You can't wall off the sea. And there are trillions of dollars worth of real estate there that, as I once interviewed Philip Stoddard, who's the mayor of, I believe, South Miami Beach, he says, we know how this story ends. Eventually, we're going to give up and leave. It's just a question of when that'll happen. Is it 50 years? Is it 100 years? Is it 200 years? But those ramifications, while they sound like they're far away, we're really already paying for that in what I would call a hidden climate adaptation tax, because they're building infrastructure, they're building seawalls, they're building pumps, and
higher insurance rates
and more government spending. So it's really impacting all of us. We're all paying for climate change right now.
What's been interesting since the whole U.S. leaving the Paris Accord is mayors, governors, other countries really doubling down on staying the course with the accord. Do you think that businesses and entrepreneurs can keep moving forward regardless of the current political climate?
Yes, and I think they will. I think the costs of renewable energy have come down so much that are now competitive on a market level. I think that's going to continue. I'm one of those people that believes there are literally, and it's not just me, other analysts, there are literally billions and trillions of dollars to be made in the next decades on this transition to a clean energy economy. That's why China is now the world's leader in creating more renewables. Europe, many parts of Europe are well ahead of us. And it's the companies and the countries that embrace that and the governments that embrace that, whether it's a state government or a city, that are going to be the benefactors of that change. And it's interesting you mentioned cities, because Grand Marais, right here where we are, I know has taken a leadership role lately on setting some climate goals and some emissions goals for the city of Grand Marais. We're seeing that all across Minnesota. I went to the Climate Adaptation Conference last year, and we see mayors from St. Louis Park and Bemidji and St. Paul and Minneapolis that are all adopting this. So cities really are on the front lines of climate change. They're the ones seeing the impacts. They're the ones having to pay the additional infrastructure costs. So to me, it's very interesting and somewhat encouraging that that's happening.
We're talking with Paul Huttner, chief meteorologist for NPR. So I have to ask you, are you hopeful
about climate change? Well, I'm an optimist by nature, maybe a bit of a naive optimist, but I'm also a realist, and I see the immense problems that climate change is going to bring in the next decades. And I still think that the majority of people don't see some of the impacts that are going to happen. And a lot of us, we don't know what the unknowns are that could provide, you know, more Superstorm Sandy type shock waves. But where I'm optimistic is to see what's happening on the ground, to see what's happening with the cities, to see what's happening with businesses who have embraced renewable energy and are moving, you know, more toward that clean energy economy. So it's happening. In the 4 years since I've started doing ClimateCast 4 years ago, I am amazed at how far we've come with things like renewable energy. We have a long way to go to solve our climate problem, but there are really, really signs of hope and progress. So I'm, shall we say, cautiously optimistic. That's probably the best way to say it.
All right. So what kind of summer are we looking forward to here in Minnesota? And specifically, if you can, the North Shore.
Yes. Well, and you know, of course, as a good Minnesotan that I am, when it hit 90 degrees in the Twin Cities today for the first time, what do all Minnesotans do? We go to the coldest part of the state, right? So here I am in beautiful Grand Marais, which, by the way, I love Grand Marais. I'm kind of hooked, and some people know I'm up here now and then a little more often than people might know. I try to fly under the radar a little bit up here, but summers are hard to predict seasonally. Winters are much easier because these El Nino, La Nina cycles really have a strong, what we call skill score or correlation during the winter months, not so much during the summer months. So it's really hard for me to tell. It's one of those questions where I have to honestly say, I don't know if it's going to be warmer or colder than average. There don't seem to be any real strong signals this summer.
But probably wetter.
Probably wetter overall, although I'll tell you what, we're due for a pretty decent drought one of these years. It's been a while in Minnesota since we've had a significant drought. And after this little, a couple rainy spells we're going to have this weekend, we may get some thunderstorms late tonight or toward tomorrow morning. And again, this weekend, it looks pretty dry for the next week. I know this about summer in Minnesota. It's going to be beautiful.
So true. Okay, so give us a little teaser. I mean, we've heard a couple of things, and I should tell folks that we're listening to Paul Huttner tell us about these wonderful meteorological things. He's chief meteorologist for NPR. Tell us about the presentation tomorrow. You're going to be with two other scientists.
Yes.
Lee Frelick.
Lee Frelick, who's a forestry biologist with the University of Minnesota, in my opinion, the premier forestry biologist in Minnesota. He is going to talk about climate change in northern forests. And then Dr. Jay Austin from the UMD, University of Minnesota Duluth Large Lakes Observatory, the premier, I think, Lake Superior climate researcher in the upper Midwest, is also going to be there. And then I'm going to be there too. So I'm going to start and do sort of a general broad climate overview of Minnesota. Where do we stand? What are the signals telling us? And where might we go from here? And then Jay and Lee are going to speak on their subtopics, Lake Superior and climate change and northern forests. And then we're going to have all of us together and do a bit of a panel discussion. So this is, I got to give a shout out to the North House Folk School, Greg Wright, and the folks there, Jessa Frost, because I kind of stumbled onto that place a few years ago, and they've been really good to me. So last year I was sitting down with Greg, and we were talking. I was saying, you know, I'd love to do a program up here where we get Jay Austin and we get Lee Frelick. And I was amazed and honored when they actually accepted the invitation. So thanks to North House for hosting that, and I hope everybody will come out. It should be a great program, and let's just pack the place tomorrow night.
It starts at 7 o'clock tomorrow at North House Folk School. Where can people read more from you?
They can read the Updraft blog at Minnesota Public Radio News, nprnews.org. I write a daily weather blog there. They can also get ClimateCast on podcasts. They can find that. If you Google ClimateCast, there's a number of different outlets anywhere you find your podcasts. And, of course, they can hear that on NPR News every Thursday. It airs at 3:20 and again at 6:20 in the afternoon.
Wonderful. What are you going to do for fun while you're up here?
Well, you know what? I'll probably visit the tavern. There may be a lunch at the Angry Trout, definitely. And I'm a big fan of Artist Point, so I'll walk out there, and I think we're going to do a little hike, pick another hike maybe up the Gunflint Trail a little bit to
Wonderful.
Do this weekend.
Paul Huttner, thank you so much for joining us on the Roadhouse.
Thank you so much, CJ and Dave. Much appreciated.